without the people. The course of this nation does not depend on the decisions of the people. Members of Congress, distinguished citizens and fellow citizens, your enemy is not surrounding your country, your enemy is ruling your country. As we fight this war, we will remember where it began. Here in our own country.
News. Fighting the truth, CBS News. Fighting the facts with ear, CBS News. Fighting the truth, CBS News. Fighting the facts, the truth about CBS News.
This is Indie Combatant Radio, broadcasting from San Francisco Indie Media at indiecombatantradio.org and sf.indiemedia.org. Also, simulcasted on various micro radio stations. If you have any information as to the latest frequencies on which we can be picked up, you should let us know. ECR at indiemedia.org or 415-864-1006. Wow, my levels were really hot there.
Said earlier, if some of you got some of the emails that were sent out regarding tonight's special show, it is Pride Weekend, and Enemy Combatant Radio has risen to the challenge to bring you a Pride special with interviews from Gay Shame and clips from the Gay Shame Awards on Friday, the Dyke March yesterday, and some of the protests that have gone on surrounding some of the issues that have been identified within the gay community as being linked directly to capitalism. And as you know, we are anti-capitalist here at the station, so we need to put those voices out on the air. We're going to start things off tonight with some special La Tigra. I'm going to dedicate this one to Hep because a long time ago, during the anti-war protests, she requested some La Tigra, and we've probably actually played it way more than we needed to. But it's Pride Weekend, so we get to play it yet again in a certain special, significant context. So this is FYR, 50 Years of Ridicule, here on Enemy Combatant Radio, sf.indiemedia.org.
Yeah. friend who did that. She used to ride the subway in New York City. From the beginning of the line at New Lots Avenue all the way up to 241st Street in the Bronx, and nobody would bother her.
Sure. with my hands I could be here. There must have paid her a nice price. She's putting on a stupid love. This is not really, this is not really happening. You bet your life it is.
Welcome back to Enemy Combatant Radio here, streaming live from San Francisco. It is Pride Weekend 2003, and we have a very funny little story to tell you. Starting on Friday, we literally spent all day filming the Gay Shame Awards, and then we filmed, you know, the Dyke March, did interviews out there, and spent all day today editing together all the different pieces. But wait, the co-host doesn't want me to tell you this, but anyway, so we're going to be doing things a little bit rough tonight, but it's still going to be just as good, and the interviews are going to be just as stimulating. So we're also waiting for some live guests here in the studio. Ryan Casimir, who is part of a local Pride group, and also Ariel, who has been part of working with the legal team and has some updates from the Gay Shame blockade today at the Pride Parade. So anyway, we're going to cut to some more music, and then we're going to be back with some interviews for you guys. Streaming live from The Mission, Enemy Combatant Radio.
At a farmyard filled with animals, and this is the story of their times.
Old man Sammy had a farm, walked the land with the rifle. Most of the time shit was calm, his whole life was maintained off the everyday labor, from the mules in the field to the cattle in the stable. This is how he kept food on his table.
Max,
you would've thought he was disabled from the way he be relaxing, acting like Mr. Magnificent. But the animals was thinking something different. The sentiment was tension in the barnyard. Throughout the years they hadn't been through mad drama with the farmer, word is gone, God. And they all came to one conclusion.
All right, we're going to start out with some sound bites from the Gay Shame Awards, which happened Friday evening on the streets of San Francisco, right around the same time that Critical Mass was going on. And we actually were in the Critical Mass, which went up Market Street and met up with the Gay Shame March on Market Street. And from there, we followed the Gay Shame Award March up Market Street to the Castro, and got some interviews with some folks along the way. So we'll check out the some of the recordings from the Gay Shame Awards, the second annual Gay Shame Awards.
After the U.S. war started, Bechtel won a $680 million contract to rebuild Iraq's oil field.
Yay! Thanks, Bechtel. We love you. And third, but not last, is yet again the center. Woo! We're hoping that room rentals and major donors could finance an inclusive community center. Better start writing those social service grants, Mom. Okay, who's the winner, Matilda?
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Oh, you spelled my name right, too. Okay. Oh my God.
Drum roll, please, drum roll.
Drum roll, drum roll. Wrong. Okay. The Bechtel Corporation!
A rainbow missile, that's what I've been looking for a long time. I looked at Diesel, I looked at the Pottery Barn, I looked at the Frame Line Film Festival, no rainbow missiles. But here today at the Gay Shame Awards, we have everything. Our next award is the Wargasm Award. Now, I know many of you were probably having orgasms as soon as the bombs started dropping. My legs got a little shaky and I started to moan a little bit. The Wargasm Award is for all those wonderful San Francisco and Bay Area patriots. And here today to present the Wargasm Award.
I don't think we...
Well, oh look, it's Mary again.
Hi, I'm Mary.
Hi.
Hi.
Who's nominated for the Wargasm Award?
You know, I have a list of all the nominees right here, as a matter of fact.
Why, let us know.
May I? All right. First on the list of nominees for the Wargasm Award, the San Francisco Police Department for arresting 2,000, count them, 2,000 anti-war demonstrators. It doesn't get any bigger than this until the earth shakes. Oh my God, the earth is shaking, it's my phone. Oh dear, excuse me. Next on the list we have Madonna for making an anti-war video and then chickening out of releasing it in the United States. Madonna may be rich, but she's not a Christian and she's not a Jew. My, oh my, what an extreme point of view. All right, Tony Hall, San Francisco Supervisor Tony Hall. For those of you who may not know, Tony Hall has the most conservative voting record in the entire 11-member Board of Supervisors. And he demanded that anti-war protesters pay the cost themselves of their own incarceration and brutalization.
That sounds fair.
What a fabulous idea. Finally, in this category, we have four nominees, because in this day and age, there are just so many wargasms going on that we just couldn't limit it to all right. It's the Oakland Police Department for the bloodshed and scars left by its less lethal weapons after the Oakland docks demonstrations. I know some of you were there. Barry?
Oh yeah, do you want the award?
Oh my goodness.
Oh my God, who is it? It's such a highly competitive field here. The Wargasm Award. Let's have a little moaning for the Wargasm Award.
What do we have on the prize list? I'm a little confused because all it says here is that we have a golden shower, and I have no idea what that means.
Look, everyone, the golden shower is going on right now. Brilliant. We have a golden shower. And who is it for? Who is the Wargasm Award for?
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, it goes to Supervisor Tony Hall! Would anyone like to contribute?
Okay.
Any contributors? No? Oh, here's a contributor. Ooh, gorgeous.
And why exactly is Tony Hall getting a jar of piss? Tell us, Mary.
I have absolutely no idea.
Well, it's not because he's a golden shower fetishist, as long as we know. But it's because Tony Hall wanted to pass a law to make sure that everyone who is urinating on the streets is locked up. That's right. Tony Hall wants prison sentences for people who can't find a bathroom in time. Well, we'll be saving this jar of piss for Tony Hall over at the Board of Supervisors, even more conservative than Gavin Newsom. Well, our final award to present here at the U.S. Mint, while we're on the theme of money, is a very popular San Francisco subject right now. It's our favorite loft spaces. Oh my God, there's so many. Right over there, if anyone could look back there across from Safeway, right? Those mecha lofts were some of the first lofts to be built in San Francisco. I remember looking at those lofts and thinking, who the hell would want to live across the street from the Safeway parking lot? But as we all know here today, that was only the beginning. Now the whole city of San Francisco looks like the Safeway parking lot.
And who here today do we have to present the Our Favorite Love Space Award? Well, I guess I'm just gonna have to present this one ourselves. Well, we have the Valencia. Now, everyone knows the most important thing when looking for a loft space is location, location, location. And we all know that Valencia Street is the hottest, hippest location in town right now. And the Valencia is so safe because it's right across from the San Francisco Police Department. Our second nominee over by the Bay Bridge is the Avalon Towers. The most high security lofts in all of San Francisco. That's right, people need a lot of security before jumping in their SUVs on the way to the highway to go to Silicon Valley to their gorgeous jobs. And the third nominee is also on Valencia Street. Imagine that. So many lofts on Valencia. It is the Hotel Tropicana. That's right, they've converted a residence hotel into a new, trendy, luxury residence hotel. For everyone who's moving to the Mission and can't quite find the right apartment in time. That's right, the Hotel Tropicana has IKEA furniture in every room and a large screen TV. Well, let's see who the award goes to. Let's have a drum roll, please. Oh my God, it's a surprise winner. I bet no one expected. The Hotel Tropicana! Living it up at the Hotel Tropicana! Let's keep on moving. There's so many more awards and so little time. And I need to get to Badlands. Now I need a cocktail. Let's get moving towards the Castro.
Anyway. Okay, cool.
I think Max is
just
gonna
say. We want to hear more women. There's not a lot of women that have a lot to say about this. So we're out here on our way to the Castro. It's the Gay Shame March, the Friday as leading up to the Pride weekend, where hundreds of, you know, possibly thousands of people are coming from all over to celebrate Pride weekend here in San Francisco. But there's a slightly smaller group here that has something maybe a little bit different to say. Or is it maybe the same? I don't know. Maybe you could tell us what you're doing out here at this Gay Shame March.
I think it's definitely different. I think people here are trying to talk about the fact that being queer isn't about commercialism, and it's not being about a consumerist, and it's not about fucking over other communities. It's about working together in the struggle for justice, and that includes like standing against war and standing against racism and standing against classism and transphobia and all of the other things that affect queer people's lives at all moments.
We've also heard, especially in San Francisco, there's a really big emphasis on gay men and what it means to be a queer male in this society. But a lot of what's left out, I think, hearing a lot from different people on the street, is that there's not a lot of talk about issues that affect, you know, lesbians, transgender, transsexuals, things like that, you know. And they're kind of a group that's become more and more marginalized, even within this city that's supposed to be this really liberal city. What do you guys think about that?
You can answer that one. No, you go.
Well, particularly, like, I myself as a trans person who grew up in this region thought, like, this was the safe, great place to be a gay. And yeah, you can be gay in the sense of gay male, particularly middle class and white, with access to houses in the Castro and access to be in a coffee shop and the cast around and not get kicked out or get asked to leave. And so I think a lot of it is central to that. And if you look at a lot of the work that's coming out of SF AIDS Foundation and the center and different organizations throughout the city, it's really focused on the experiences of gay men, particularly white and middle class gay men.
Are there positive outlets here in the city that you guys feel you can tap into, that people that are actually trying to get back to the roots of what gay activism is?
I definitely do. I think there's organizations like Kuav and Lyric, and I'm trying to think of some other ones, but I know that there are people doing the work, and there's folks here doing gay shame stuff. There's QUIT, which is Queers United Against the War, and there's lots of folks doing real work that affects people's lives.
And what were your names?
My name is Max Cohen.
Caitlin O'Connor. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks.
All right, we're almost to the Castro, and I'm here with two gentlemen. What are your names?
Simon.
Mojo.
Simon and Mojo. And Gay Shame is out here protesting something very specific. We got people over here wearing t-shirts that say capitalists ruin everything. What the hell does capitalism have to do with being gay?
That's a very good question. And that's what it's becoming. It's becoming like a very capitalistic reality. Like, what are you wearing, girlfriend? How much did it cost? Oh, who are you? It's like, who are you, right? I don't know.
So what does it mean, especially in this day and age, in an age where we're seeing a crackdown on our civil liberties, a war on terror, supposedly, where peace activists are called terrorists, where people of color are called terrorists? What does it mean to be a gay, bisexual, transgender, transsexual individual in society right now?
Wow, that's a pretty intense thing to be in society, you know? I mean, it's so charged, and people really react to that. It's like being this beacon for something that's changing the world, and there's not anything like that in the normal world anymore. There's still remnants from tribal societies, like in southern India and in China, but we're like the new form of it, you know? Like ancient ritual, except it's modern day, like, hi, I'm transgender, or hi, I'm from hell, whatever. It's like a trip. We're holding up a big four. But it's easy.
So what does the Stonewall riots mean to you guys?
That's kind of where it all began. And I think that's a problem a lot of people have with gay pride, is that it no longer reflects that activism of Stonewall. Now it's sort of a sold-out corporate party sponsored by, you know, Bud Light and...
Bud Light.
I used to work for a gay magazine, and all the advertisements were either smoking ads or AIDS meds or alcohol ads. And it's like, we don't realize it, but
Well, they want you to party, right?
Money that supports us is the money that's killing us.
Right. But don't you... But, you know, isn't it great that, you know, people like, the Chronicle and, you know, corporations that can give minority groups money? Isn't it true that people would want that kind of support? More friends. So, I mean, don't you guys think that you would, you know, that kind of support is important? I mean, what? Yeah. People are giving you money. I mean, isn't that great? They care about minority groups, and they want to see the gay population flourish. I mean, isn't that something to be supported?
I think so. I mean, it is in a way, because just to be acknowledged and not just to be, like, crucified or, like, beaten to shit is pretty amazing. I mean,
but
20 years ago, it was a whole different reality.
And by being activists, who's saying that we're not supporting that? We're not saying we're not supporting that. We're saying we're activists for change, for something different.
One last question. I mentioned the Chronicle. I mean, what kind of coverage, when you look at the media today, and I'm not just talking about San Francisco, where at least gay issues have a bit more prominence, but even nationwide, internationally, what kind of presence, what kind of image do you see reflected back of your lives within the media, mainstream media?
It's pretty confusing, because it's like we're a big group moving along with supposedly a mission and a purpose and a statement. But then there's so many voices, it's so easy for things to just get totally kind of like mishy and wishy-washy. When really it's like there's very specific things that we're talking about, and those are really what, I mean, really people should talk to the people who organized it. because otherwise we're just like, I don't know, I came here because there's cute boys, you know, I mean.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
All right, enough of that. See, we're all bemoaning the fact that I started to tell you guys a very funny story earlier, but basically we spent all day today, all day. Didn't even go out and party because we spent all day editing these fucking pieces together to make it tight, snappy, snazzy for your listening enjoyment. And at 6:55 this evening, the computer crashed, taking with it all of our bountiful treasure. And it blows. It blows. That really hurt your ears, didn't it? Anyway, so some parts that we wanted to edit out are you're listening to, which kind of sucks because it's not as snazzy. But to remedy that, we actually have in the studio this evening some guests who are going to talk to us a little bit about, well, lots of different stuff, but also about today. There was today was, of course, the Pride Parade, which is held annually in San Francisco. They block off Market Street. It's the main sponsor is Bud Light, among others, and, you know, Absolute Vodka, Diesel Jeans, and you know they put out a lot of you know floats and pour tons and tons of money. Even the Chronicle gets in it, and you know they paint their little Chronicle van pink and say, "Oh, the Chronicle comes out every day." Haha. Anyway, and you know and thousands of people come and check out the parade, and they usually have some guest of honor that typically has done little to advance gay rights in a more radical sense. And this year was no different. As a matter of fact, this year was the family pride parade, meaning that it's now okay to be gay as long as you're raising a child in a values-based family. Hey, Wayne. So anyway, like any good block of gay shamers should do. Gay Shame came out this morning and did some blockades and some actions. And there were some very misleading headlines that some of you may have read if you're here locally, like out in the Chronicle. I know I saw something in the Mercury News about how Gavin Newsom was attacked with copper pipes. That's actually not true. And we have in the studio with us some witnesses. Yay for the witnesses! And they're going to talk with us a little bit about this morning and what it was all about and what actually went down. Can introduce yourselves if you want.
All right. I'm Bat from Seattle.
And I'm not going to give my name because that's a tradition. And I actually didn't see anything. I'll give some legal stuff, though. Oh, I probably gave away who I am. Dope.
You're sorry. It's Legal Observer number 21. So, Bat, you're actually here traveling right now. You're originally from Seattle, right?
Right.
And the reason that you came out to San Francisco was why? Like, was it specifically for this action?
Well, actually, I heard about that Bush was coming to town when I was down in Sacramento for the WTO. And I'm like, oh, good, Bush. And then I get over here and they're like, oh, wait, there's gay pride. And then we're like, oh, wait, gay shame. And then we're like, oh, wait, Gavin Newsom.
So many reasons to frequent our beautiful city by the bay. Non-touristy reasons.
Yeah. I was in San Francisco once when I was three. So I don't know this town really that well. But the past 3 days that I've been up here was the Bush. And then we were busy making pink and black flags and cutting up cloths so we could have a pink and black block to march with gay shame.
Right on.
And
so what happened this morning? The parade started at 10. And I know, like, for those of you guys that missed the events of last year, last year was the first time that Gay Shame had actually done an action at, to my knowledge, at the Pride Parade. They brought out, like, a couch and, like, all this different stuff. And the police, you know, tried to take the couch away and yada yada. And they had blockades set up as the parade was turning on to Mission. And one of the most significant events of the day was that, you know, this girl had climbed onto one of the blockades and was trying to climb over it, basically just so she didn't have to go the mile-long route all the way around. And one of the cops grabbed her off of it, and she kind of pushed him back because, like, he was yanking her to the concrete. And as soon as she, like, put her hand out to stop him from, you know, pulling on her neck or whatever, like 9 cops descended on her, like, you know, ants at a picnic, and everybody dogpiled her and started, you know, pulling her towards the sidewalk. And, you know, pretty soon everyone's surrounding them going, let her go, let her go, let her go. And they literally commandeer a Burger King and kick everyone out of the Burger King to hold her in the Burger King so that they can do whatever it is that they were going to do to her, and had a line of police around the Burger King preventing anyone from coming in and helping this girl. And so everyone starts chanting stuff like, we don't want no Whopper Copper, in true activist creativity. And it was pretty ridiculous, and it totally did not get reported at all. And the police were really brutal to the people that were surrounding. You know, I mean, there's like a lot of like half naked people there, and they're like beating them. You know, beating women on their chests and stuff, and beating guys on their heads, and just arresting people for no reason, literally for just yelling at the police. And you know, it didn't make it into the papers at all. It was just like, Ian McKellen, yay, he came to be in the parade. So that was last year. Hopefully they stepped it up this year.
Yeah, this year we met up and we put out the word yesterday to some people to tell people they trust to come for the Pink and Black Block, as well as like the mutiny. So we were all there. There was kind of a semi-random crew of people as well. And we were all in pink and black, and then we ran into the mutiny crowd, and we heard Gary Newsom was on his way, so we went down to find an opening, because that's one of the reasons why we were there, to get up in front of him and to say, like, basically no to not only the corporate infiltration of gay pride and making it, like, the in thing, or just total corporate domination of all subcultures, as well as to say no to Gary Newsom, because why is he in the gay pride parade? Because he's targeting gays, he's targeting people of color, he's targeting the poor, he's targeting the homeless, and he's going to put more people out on the streets. And we just wanted to get up there and say, hey, we're not really for that. We'd like to be in the parade too. We're radical queers. We're radical queer supporters, and we want to say shame on you for being a hypocrite by being in this parade and prosecuting those people that don't necessarily have the white male privilege that he does. All right, tell us a little bit what happened. Well, we jumped over the metal barricade thing, which was kind of new for me for gay pride, because we used to be able just to go out and join the rest of the people. But there's about like 20 of us that got over. There was more that couldn't get over before the cops came. We got over, and then some of the Newsom boys, the people surrounding Gavin, actually started. One of them physically touched and tried to and shook one of the pink and black blockers, and I got tripped by one of them, and they confiscated our banner.
Were these cops, or were these like
Were Gavin actually Newsom the bodyguards? Newsom people around Gary Newsom in pro Newsom shirts. But
so
we were not engaging in any sorts of violence whatsoever, and we did not go out there to attack. We went out there to march. Basically to say, hey, we're pride. We have pride, and we don't want corporate sponsors.
Yeah. What do the banners say? Gavin Newsom, you suck dick.
No.
You wish.
I should remember it, seeing as I like rolled over it when they tripped me. mutiny in unity, not greed. Or
queer mutiny, not corporate unity, or something. Or I don't know. That's one. Was it the red sign? Because that's
yeah,
the sign that was.
Yeah,
like,
I don't remember exactly what mutiny. It said. Sadly,
all we know is queer mutiny is a good thing. But a lot of the headlines were saying that because they confiscated the banner, and I guess it was tied. Wasn't it tied to like copper poles or something?
We also had 3 flags, 2 smaller flags, 2 black and pink flags, and a larger flag, with a pink lace anarchy heart.
Aww.
On it.
And love and rage.
So I think those are what saying was weapons. We pretty much dumpstered the poles.
Right.
And one of them did happen to be metal, but...
Yeah. Well, and it was so ridiculous because, like, the headlines, are decrying people bringing out weapons. And maybe Legal Observer 21 can tell us, but it sounds like people are being charged with felonies because of this so-called possession of weapons, when in fact they were being used to hold banners.
Well, that's exactly right. They were, in fact, charged with felonies. And I guess I don't want to go into real detail here yet, but... A couple of charges were, let me see, and I think it's already been put out there in the press. I'm not going to remember until I look it up. one of them was a conspiracy to commit a crime. Another one's a
conspiracy. That's their favorite charge of the moment right now. It's like the trendy charge. It's like conspiracy charges.
That's
right. It's totally preemptive. It's ridiculous.
Have you been charged with conspiracy yet? No. Why not? Well, get out there and do something.
That's right. If you haven't been charged with conspiracy charges yet, then you must not be protesting hard enough.
Correct. Okay, here it is. Threatening a state official. Yeah, that's what it is. Because as we all
threatening
know...
Threatening a state official.
Yeah, Gavin.
Gavin Newsom.
Yeah, you know, gotta protect his hiney. So, they are right now in jail with no bail until their hearing. And we don't know when that hearing is going to be. We expect it in the next couple of days. People should look on the Indie Media website. We hope to have an update as soon as we know something. And, we're on it looking for lawyers and... there is somebody doing jail support, and I wish we had a contact for that. Is there a contact we can give over the air for that?
For jail support? Solidarity and legal solidarity.
I have an email that you can do. So no matter where you are, if you want to do jail support, that's rad. It is bateyes, bateyes, at uk2.net. And I'll get myself to a computer somehow, and I'll check that.
Right. And also for those of you guys that want to call in, if you have your own report of what happened this morning, if you can be of some assistance to the people that are here tonight, you want to give a call to the ECR studio, and that's 415-864-1006. Once again, for those of you that just tuned in, you're listening to Enemy Combatant Radio. That's 415-864-1006. And we're talking about the gay shame action and the pink and black block action today during the Pride Parade. So what was the parade like today? I mean, what were some of the, like, you know, stunts that they were pulling, basically.
What were their stunts? Apparently it's we had a Gap flow, a Smirnoff Ice flow, total corporate sellout or buyout of the gay pride. So hey, be gay, buy my product. I saw a lot of that, which I don't necessarily agree with. I like the more radical gay, hey, I'm gay, get used to it, don't buy my product, like me for who I am.
Right.
There's a lot of people. Like I said, also, it was barricaded off, so those people who wanted to be in there that wasn't on a corporate float or some kind of, like, pre-planned float couldn't really get into it, which I don't necessarily agree with. Like the gay pride in Seattle, we could just, like, walk on the street, join in. It was totally hyped up, commercialized, corporate gay
pride.
That's
a big deal. If you can't, you know, I mean, if you're being excluded from something that's supposed to be representative of you, that's totally exclusive, you know, and it goes back to the very, you know, like square one of, you know, the queer community being segregated from the quote unquote, you know, mainstream assimilation or whatever. That's horrible.
You have to be mainstream queer or else you can't get a say. You can't be a radical queer and get in the pride, which we got
it's
in the pride.
It's family pride, that, you know, unless you've got triplets. I mean.
Yeah, well, we got in the family pride thing anyway.
But
I
you
mean,
adopted
we're family.
With your very cute partner. That's the way it works now, I guess. But... So, I mean, something that I think that, you know, one of the other issues that we talked about with a lot of people that were marching was this idea of where queer politics is in general in terms of, you know, being representative of all different kinds of queer, you know, because it's not just gay, it's not just lesbian anymore. And I think, you know, people are very apt to genderize things into like these two distinct genders, and it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah, not at all. You have trannies, you have transvestites. It also depends on what region you're from. Like, one thing can be PC one area, another thing is not PC. I know a lot of people revoke their pronouns. I try to respect people for like what they want to be called and what their sexuality. Some people don't really have a sexuality, and why can't those guys be in the gay pride parade either,
right?
You know,
right? Or not, at least not be like allowed to be in, but not made up to be, you know, like prettified and sanitized and, you know, made more aesthetically pleasing or
yeah.
whatever, you know.
It's
like, if you don't look like the people in Will and Grace, then you can't like hang out.
Yeah, if you don't look like the stereotypical gay HBO male, I'm sorry, you can't be on this float or in this part of the parade. You have to be on the side. I don't agree with that, because a lot of gay people I meet, I meet a lot of sorts of people, but they're not stereotypical pretty let's just dance with music, which is not to say anything bad about anybody, but I saw a lot of that, and I think maybe we should have diversified that a little to get the radicals in without getting arrested, which I think is why we were mainly arrested, is because we weren't your mainstream.
Right. And I think that maybe Legal Observer 21 has some more to say about that, just in terms of like maybe some things that even your friends can do to be more conscious about the realities of what it's like to be queer.
So let me in fact say a little about that. I am not gay in the traditional sense. I'm not a tranny. I guess that I cross-dress, although I don't classify myself as a cross-dresser. I classify myself as a genderqueer. And most folks will say, huh, what is that? And then, of course, there's the sorry state of having to go around and educate everybody. But, you know, you figure that with your own community or your own household or your friends that you don't have to do that much education. And let me tell you, I suppose I don't have to tell you, friends, that is so not true. Even in your very own backyard and spitting distance, folks just don't know what it's all about. And it's not necessarily about pronouns. I don't find that I have any useful pronouns. I just don't like any of them. And it would just make me very happy if people alternated or randomly flipped a coin and said, okay, he in this sentence and she in the next one. Because I just don't, you know, the third gender pronouns that I've looked at just don't seem very interesting to me. But anything that's hard for folks means they don't want to do it. And, you know, I can understand that. Anything that's work, you know, we're all busy. We have our own things that we're working on, and, gee, having to figure out how to fit somebody in that doesn't really fit in a category, and now we have to, like, stretch our world vision even more and figure out how to make the language work, and, oh, it's just too hard, you know? But we're going to have to do it. We did this stuff before. This is something we've been doing forever, right? Okay, first there's gays, then... Oh, hey, lesbians, are they really gays? Like, is that sex as threatening as gay men sex? I mean, for God's sake, we've been down all that road. Apparently so. So now here we are. And now if you're, you know, if there's a gender issue, well, it must be that you're either F to M or M to F, because where else is there to go? And of course, that's so not true. And as all the trannies know out there, that's not necessarily where they're all headed either. They're headed for maybe some other place. I mean, there's a lot of either in between or different or a million genders. And frankly, I got some of those. I'm one of those million, you know? So, but now how do I put that into a 10 second soundbite? I sure don't. And how do I get that into this gay pride parade? You must be kidding. It is so not going there. So anyways, gay shame, at least gay shame is a great umbrella. They do totally get it. They're out there for you. So, you know, next year, you should be out there with them, supporting them. And this year, you should be down there at the jail and at tomorrow's press conference. Have we talked about tomorrow's press conference? I think not.
Press conference? What?
Tomorrow's press conference, 850 some street. It's the sheriff's station in front.
Oh, it's 850 Bryant, guys. For those of you that are the local that know that site well, it's 850 yeah. Bryant.
I don't really know the city.
You have an out of towner here.
Yeah, complete out of towner. But yeah, we're gonna have a press conference. It looks like some of the people that are in jail might be out, so they might be up there with us. But if not, we're gonna do the best we can for them. We've talked to them from inside of the jail. We have somewhat knowing what they want to say, but hopefully we'll be able to get in contact with them before we go up. But it is planned. The call out is to numerous mainstream and independent papers and news sources. So hopefully anybody, even your school zine, your magazine, your little comic book, come out to the press conference, ask questions, and know the true story.
Right on. And that is what time?
It's at noon.
It's at noon. High noon, baby.
Yeah. It's a duel. It's a duel, baby. Come prepared.
And how many people are inside, did you say?
There's six.
Six people.
Six people were arrested. That's another thing that was really strange about the whole arrest situation. Only one girl was arrested. So she's alone in more ways than one. Mm-hmm. Four of them are doing jail solidarity. So, and those are the guys. And they've been separated. Right now, three guys are together. We don't know where the two other guys, but they don't have contact really? With the three guys. And the female is completely separate. But
is that where she wants to be, or
We haven't been able to get in contact with her. I'm okay. sure it's not where she, well, I'm not sure, but like if I was in her shoes, I wouldn't want to be separated, especially after something like that. And it was really odd. They caught some of them. Like they caught a lot. They caught people and put them over the fence and let them go. Others they told to hop over the fence. Others they arrested on the spot. And like, for instance, in the case of one of my friends, he was told to hop over the fence. He did. And then he was arrested.
When he hopped over the fence?
Yeah. After he hopped over the fence, he was arrested.
So weird. It's very creepy. The police have become very, very efficient in terms of their research and their targeting of political activists and specifically leaders of activist groups. And they've got everyone's number. I mean, they can identify people on the spot identification. And it's very, very, very scary.
Well,
Gay Shame has no leaders, though. But
that's right. Speaking of those so-called leaders, those so-called leaders in the prosecutorial community, such as Terrence Helena, need to hear about these arrests and how wrong they were and how soon those people ought to be let out of jail with their charges dropped. So please do pick up your phones. You can't pick them up now. Of course, they're a 9-to-5 operation over there, Monday through Friday only. But this number used to be good. Yeah, I'm putting it out right on the air. 415-553-1741. If that's not good anymore, I understand there's some kind of phone shuffle that went on down there recently. You could, of course, go to your phone books. It's not that hard. And give him a piece of your mind. Not only that, get your friends to do the same thing, because he has complete discretion to get these charges out of there and get those people back on the streets where they belong, as you know.
Do we know if Terrence Hallinan has a position on gay issues within this community? I mean, I'm interested. I mean, we've seen what he's done during the anti-war protests, but
it'll be very interesting to see in an election year what his position is.
Oh, Terrence Hallinan. You know, it's weird. That's another good point, is that, you know, elections are coming up. And one of the best things about the Gay Shame protest on Friday was the culmination of all the award ceremony at the intersection of Castro and 18th, right in front of Harvey's, where they literally, the owner of Harvey's, Paul Langley, had paid for a ad for Gavin Newsom, two ads actually, on both sides of the corner of the building, Gavin Newsom for mayor. And you know, their point was this man has done such a disservice to the memory of Harvey Milk that it's irreparable, you know. So they awarded him a photograph of Dan White, who's the assassin of Harvey Milk, and he was awarded the what was it? It was the gay straight or the straight alliance of reactionary or the gay alliance with like straight reactionaries or something. And I mean, what do you guys think about that? Amiano is supposedly the token gay candidate, but now we have someone like Newsom who has been anti-gay for a long time, but that's coming out now and really pushing hard for the very important gay vote.
Thank you for asking me that while my mouth is full. We appreciate
Not
that.
Your time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, frankly, any of these politicians that panders to get vote X or Y ought to think again. But the problem with this pandering is that there is a gay mainstream. There is a gay audience that has sold out. Dare I be critical like that? Yes. Or these corporate floats would not be there. They're there because folks let it happen, and to some degree, maybe even they welcome it. And until that turns around, we are going to face this problem that people like Gavin are going to come in and say, I can do it, I can represent you, it's so good, I'm going to support your rights. And people will believe it because their agendas and his agendas won't be so different in the end. And that's a very sorry thing. So right. We need to turn that around.
Right. And one of the funniest things that I thought it happened yesterday was, like, while we're watching this effigy of Gavin Newsom, like, going up in flames in the middle of the intersection, woo-hoo, this little old lady comes up behind me and taps me on the shoulder, and she's like, why are they burning Gavin Newsom? And she's like, I thought he was gay. And I'm like, no, not to my knowledge. And she's like, are you sure? I thought he'd had some gay encounters before. And I was like, I think the only kind of gay encounter he's had is from behind a glass door with a bunch of bodyguards in front of him.
Wasn't it him and W behind the bushes? Oh.
I just want to say I find it incredibly hilarious that somebody would change their sexuality just so they could get a little bit more votes from a target audience that hasn't really been targeted.
Right.
Because a lot of people are afraid to say I'm gay, especially if they're in politics. And why not? It's like entrepreneurship. Let's go for a new audience.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, I don't think he's saying that he's gay because he is married. He does have a wife, a very wealthy wife. But
What's wrong with being married and gay? You got a problem there?
No. I'm saying that would totally, like, in his mind, hurt his political career. But what he is doing is rounding up all these, sexy, cute, appealing, winsome, wholesome young men to go out into the Castro and market himself to the gay male community, predominantly the gay male community. I mean, he could give a shit about women at this point, but I mean, for the most part. And so a lot of the young men that we interviewed are like, yeah, I've seen the Newsom campaigners out in the Castro. Yeah, they're flirting with everybody. They're being really cute and acting like what they see on TV is acting like gay, what they get from TV. Oh, this is what gay looks like, so this is what I should act, to try and seduce some voters or whatever. And, a lot of people were just really turned off by that. It was just such a creepy kind of sleazy, campaign to almost like literally to seduce voters and to do it in a way that was almost making a mockery of them, Like this isn't, not everyone acts like Jack of Will and Grace,
No, that's right. And it's actually very creepy anytime that somebody says, I'm going to go out and make sexual advances at folks in order to get their votes. What is that? That's totally unwelcome and demeaning and a variety of other things. It doesn't matter what your gender or sexuality is there. If somebody walks in and does that, they need to be out of here right now. We should actually out in a different sort of way these folks that are these campaign pretty boys for Gavin. Find out who they are, how they were hired, what they're being paid, and what they're... their real orientations are.
That's the kind of the good outing.
That's right. Get that information out there. Oh.
Right
on.
We
might have another visitor.
We might have another visitor?
Oh, yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm going to pass the mic right over. Right over to Soledad. Hold on.
Actually, I did have audio of Soledad talking. She was the voice of during our police segment because she commented on the police. So she's in there. We just need to...
Hi, y'all.
Hey, Soledad. So, I mean, you're here. Why don't you go ahead and talk about the relationship between the queer community and the police?
Well, I mean, the relationship between the queer community and the police used to be what it honestly represents, which is a dynamic of oppression. The police were known to not be our friends. They constantly harassed us and intimidated us. And now it seems to be that certain individuals have a sense of amnesia in relation to history and the present, especially in relation to trans folks, intersex folks, to sex workers, poor mm-hmm. queers, queers outside of the Bay Area, just basically mm-hmm. anybody who's harassed on a regular basis by the police who happens to be queer. So this is a prime example of what what happened today is a prime example of how the police are not our friends, and they will continue to harass us until we have true liberation for all queers.
Right.
Thanks.
Mean, you guys.
Thanks for reminding us.
That's right. Let's talk more about how horrible the police are.
No, actually, thanks for reminding us, though, that the cops are never our friends and that the state is out there to maintain power. And it's easy to lose sight of that in your day-to-day lives. Take it away, because I just lost the middle of that thought, and I have to eat my nachos.
One of the other things that I did want to touch on that you actually brought up earlier, 21, was that there was, there's this common, there is an idea out there right now that's perpetuated within mainstream TV and movies that a woman in a relationship with a woman, in a sexual relationship with a woman, is not as displeasing as, say, a relationship between two men. And, it's been really difficult, even in mainstream heterosexual porn, there's all these women that have been, in these relationships that are, really eroticized. And that was one of the women that we interviewed at the Deichmarkt, actually, was really pissed off about this. She's like, I'm so sick of seeing women, together, and it's like supposedly this like really exotic relationship, and it's really sexy. She's like, but people think that other types of relationships are disgusting, And then today, yesterday, we had this Supreme Court ruling come down saying that, well, sodomy is okay, but it's only okay, within the privacy of your own home. We don't want to know about it, because in a sense, we're still keeping this a dirty little secret, and it's still something that we don't want to touch. And unless we can, sanitize it in some way, unless we can aestheticize it, then we don't really want to touch it,
That's certainly true. I did read through Scalia's dissent, and by the way, I'd urge everybody.
Very good, 21.
I urge everybody to go and read that, because it is a reminder that there are at least three, and then sometimes four or five folks on that court who are not our friends, not by any stretch of the imagination.
You're not my friend.
They will do whatever they can to squash us, jail us, maim us, kill us, anything that they can. But however, I do want to point out one bright side, and that is that I did see in the majority opinion the words anal sex. Yes, they are. They are right there. So please put that on your calendar. You don't see that every day from the Supreme Court.
On your refrigerator.
That's right. So, they may have their little squeamish concerns, but on the other hand, when push comes to shove, some things get done.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, it definitely was, like, I was, actually reading through some stuff today, and so was Mark, about how they still haven't applied this to a person's right to pursue their own personal values, opinions, and their own happiness. It has to do with this search for liberty, and they're really, the way that they're phrasing it and the way that all the mainstream media has picked up on it to phrase it is really not in alignment with the Constitution. It's literally not taken out of the Constitution. Wait, I think Mark wants to say something else.
No, actually, what I was reading today was I was going through some of the opinion pieces and news articles, and also reading the actual majority opinion that I believe Kennedy wrote, Justice Kennedy, and it seemed like a lot of the articles, like in USA Today and et cetera, were basically saying that the court was upholding a right to privacy, and then other right wing commentators and also Justice Thomas were saying, well, wait a minute, there is no right to privacy in the Constitution. But actually, there is no right to privacy that was in the majority opinion. What they were talking about was basically a right to liberty, which is actually very rarely pronounced by the Supreme Court these days. It's pretty rare that you actually hear them say, oh, we actually have a right to liberty, and there's no state interest which could overrule that. Usually, like in the case of the the adult content filtering in the libraries and all these other decisions recently, they've said, oh, well, they don't even really mention the right to liberty. So I thought it was interesting that for once they actually read the Constitution where it says we have a right to liberty, and they actually applied it. And I think that it's not saying that much, but if they keep applying it, it could be a possible beginning of a bright side or something.
Well, the cynic is going to weigh in, unfortunately, and say that this is, you know, what you do is you figure out what you want your ruling to be, and then afterwards you figure out how you're going to get there when you write the opinion. And I'm not saying anything that anybody doesn't know. And if you don't know that, that's because you've been watching too many Hollywood movies. But then you would not be listening to this radio station.
You might be. Some might have tricked you.
So the deal here, of course, is that it's pretty hard to find folks, unless you are talking to, you know, Strom Thurmond, who has recently departed us. Oh, what a shame it is.
Wasn't that weird, though, that I'm the same day? I was trying to get a chronological order of when those events happened, and I was like, I wonder if he like read the ruling and then had a heart attack and died.
It's hard to know. One
can
only
hope.
It'd
be really cool if that was the demise of his death. Of Strom Thurmond, was the advancement of gay rights.
Apoplexy there, but in any case, folks like him are the folks that you would have to ask that would say, "Oh my God, this act is horrible," and people in their own bedrooms really shouldn't be allowed to do it. However. If you go, and it really doesn't matter if you're in San Francisco, wherever you go in the country, people have really reached the notion that that's just people's own business. It doesn't mean that they're allowed to do it in the street or talk about it, or God forbid we can't watch it in the movies, but, you know, if you're doing it in your own bedroom and nobody knows, then nobody cares, and it's just rude for the police to come in and arrest people. And so this is one
it's
thing
just
where...
rude.
Yes, isn't it just rude?
It's just
so
rude.
This is the sort of thing where the Supreme Court, if they had ruled anything else, they would have been lynched as soon as they left the building. So I'm not sure that this is so revolutionary or even the start of any kind of new wave. It would be nice, but the cynic weighs in and says, I don't think so.
All right, well, we're going to go to some more audio from the actual Gay Shame Awards. And this is one example of the very diverse breadth and scope of the politics of gay shame and some of the goals that they're trying to achieve in terms of getting the larger message out that it's not just about queers, it's about homeless queers, it's about you know, queers of color, it's about queers that are being marginalized in all different kinds of ways, basically by the ends of capitalism. And we actually have an interview with someone from Gay Shame later on this clip, Mary Oliver, and he's going to talk a little bit about social rights versus political and civil rights. But for right now, this is one example of some of the politics of Gay Shame as they award the Body Fascism Award. No, Body Fascism Award to the INS. You're listening to Enemy Combatant Radio here on sf.indymedia.org. And having some almost.
The Body Fascism Award is given to those who show outstanding achievement in the promotion of unrealistic body image. First of all, we have Gold's Gym for making sure we meet the cut by emphasizing body sculpting, weightlifting, and protein shakes over aerobic exercise and individuals' needs. Gold's Gym treats us like a piece of meat and making sure we know we're not beautiful just the way we are. Which we are, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Next is Diesel.
Yes!
We're focusing so many... For forcing so many of us to use their clothes, and telling us that we can get better tips if we spend loads of money on their corporate clothes.
Yay,
the new Diesel ad, for those who haven't seen it, shows a woman in tight jeans, and it says, "Waitresses earn 3 times more in Diesel jeans."
Yay.
I'm gonna go get some Diesel jeans right away.
Only 3 nights of tips.
And finally, we have the Immigration Naturalization Services brought to you by the Department of Homeland Security. for the registration and detention of tens of thousands of Arab, Muslim, and South Asian men.
Shout it out!
And from its fascist approach to immigrant bodies. Lock them up, ship them out, and ignore their cries of pain.
Yeah.
And the winner is...
Oh my god.
Can we have a drum roll, please? The INS. Many people are still unaware that the INS finally tied the knot with the Department of Homeland Security, changing her name to the Bureau of Citizenship and Immigration Services.
But we still like to refer to her by her maiden name, as the agency has remained just as oppressive and racist as ever.
Along with her new wife, the INS has been working diligently to cleanse America of terrorists. Unfortunately, the agency has had a hard time finding many real terrorists. Out of over 144,000 suspicious Muslims interviewed and detained during the special registration process, only 11 turned out to be suspects.
The INS's past also came back to haunt her recently, when the Justice Department released a report that confirmed what immigrant rights activists have been saying all along, that the majority of the hundreds and hundreds of Muslims, Arabs, and South Asian people who were rounded up after 9/11 were actually not terrorists after all. And even worse, the INS's abusive relationship with these detainees was thrown into the spotlight as an investigative report discovered widespread violence against arrested immigrants. In these troubled times, the INS has gone few friends outside of her new wife and her best friend, John Ashcroft.
The INS has done a fabulous job, however, in jailing and abusing innocent people, tearing apart families for deportations, and ignoring basic civil liberties, like having the right to talk to a lawyer. This year, they have been exceptionally conscious of the seasonal trends and have accordingly focused their attention on Arabs and Muslims. The ever-trendy INS knows that being Muslim is a big out and is always ready to help these fashion victims to leave our country.
Truly, one last thing. No one is better suited to receive the Body Fascism Award than the INS, who dictates which bodies can stay and which bodies have to go. Congratulations, INS. And because you've had such a hard time finding real terrorists, we've decided to award you with this group of Nelly terrorists. Us!
Yeah! Where's the INS? Come and get us! We're here! Well, let's see. There's much more to see here in the beautiful Castro District! Our community! Oh my god, did everyone notice that? Gavin Newsom is here! Look at that! We're so glad he joined us today! Well, let's get moving through the beautiful Castro District!
All right, so now we're going to go ahead and play an interview. Some stuff from off the streets like you like so much.
Harvey's! I came.
And it sounds like we just found something. This might be from the Newsom burning. Yeah, don't want to miss that. All right, you're listening to Enemy Combatant Radio. If you want to call in, the number here is 415-864-1006. Streaming live from the Mission. And you can check us out at www.enemycombatantradio.org. And we have something. I promise next time it's going to be edited together so well.
Oh, and 18th. And right fucking smack in the middle of the intersection is a huge Newsom for Mayor sign right above Harvey's. I can't even believe it. What's your take on that?
My take on that in particular? Newsom knows that the gays hate him. He started his whole campaign to get the gays to like him after we started hating him, after gay shame started hating him. And he knows that he has to court that vote because it's a big one, because there's a bunch of stinky rich gays up here in the Castro. So he's up on top of Harvey's so that people will know that he's down with the movement or whatever, which is bullshit, and we know it, and that's why we're here.
And this year, actually, there's even more people than there were last year at the Gay Shame ritualistic protest. Why do you think that's happening, and why do you think people are getting even more and more pissed off?
I think people are still a little riled up from the day after the war and the couple days after the war when we took over the city. I think more and more people are just into having fun right now. It's been hot as shit lately, and they know it's coming, and it's a good time. I think a lot of people are just, I don't know, I mean, stuff builds up over time. People get more and more angry.
Well, why are people so angry? I mean, it would seem that in a city like San Francisco, gay people have it great. I mean, they're shopping. The Castro is decorated by rainbow flags, you know, year round, and you know, they even have a supervisor that used to be on the board.
The gay people that are welcome in San Francisco are generally rich, white, and not all that gay outwardly. They're really straight. They're not the queers like the rest of us. We're here to be freaks. We're here to show that there's all sorts of different types of us, that there's a huge diversity in our community, and we're here to protest all the bullshit, all the consumerism that is rife within the Pride Parade, within, you know, like in a small town, Pride is amazing because people get to be proud of themselves for the day. Out here, it ain't shit. It's a whole bunch of ads. It's a giant bunch of consumerist bullshit. We don't like that. The Castro is almost all white. It's super racist feeling. It's fucking classist as hell. Everything here is expensive. And there's just like, it's not a gay haven unless you're like rich and gay. And if you're mainstream and gay, then you can try.
So what do you think that people's perception of gay issues internationally and here in the U.S., even outside of California, is, are people aware of what's going on outside of the U.S.?
I think a lot of people here today even aren't necessarily having the best analysis of what's going on outside the United States. I think a lot of people understand or assume that the United States, you have the most freedom to be a queer without getting fucked with, and shit's terrible here. You know, it's just that the government doesn't fuck with us as much here as other places, which is a lot, and it's a lot of privilege. I think as far as other places thinking about the United States here, or thinking about queer issues in general, no one seems to manage to relate across issue boundaries. You know, queers aren't about poor, aren't about like skin color, aren't about whatever, you know. And that's something that's absurd because, you know, queers are poor and queers are, you know, all sorts of skin colors. And queers are all sorts of queer. And queers, you know, are just about everyone else.
Right on. Thanks a lot, Annie. Woo! Party 18th and Castro! Where everything devolved into a huge street party with the police sticking out like sore thumbs, looking like they weren't having a very good time. It's kind of sad. We kept going up and asking if they wanted to dance, but they weren't really into it. And actually, there was an SF police officer who's like Donna, what was her name? Donna something, Donna Lawrence, who is one of the police officers for the Castro District, and she was one of the nominees for an award for her brutalization of people within the Castro. So now we have another interview, and this is this Soledad? This is Soledad, and she's going to be talking about the police. Relationship have we seen with the police and the queer community here in San Francisco in the past?
Oh, awful. They hate us. They, like, despite the attempts to assimilate into the larger straight community, including the police, they are not here to protect us. They are not here to save us from anybody, let alone, you know, especially ourselves. And the history in the Castro has been one of lockdown, of shutdown, and of total police and martial law. So they have no fucking right to be here, and they should just pack it up and go home. And they have bad taste in uniforms.
History. Talk about what the Stonewall riots mean to you.
What the Stonewall riots mean to me is a glorious vision of what we could possibly have in our futures, of all of us working together, dykes, trannies, working class, you know, all different colors, all different races, trying to bring it all together to fight assimilation and cast off the chains that bind us. And unfortunately, we're still engaged in that fight, and that's why we need to be here in the Castro, making sure that we don't continue to fall asleep. We're here as a wake-up call.
So why is this wake-up call still necessary? I mean, you look around and the queer community has their own section in the city. They have their own neighborhood even. Why, you know, people...
And actually, that's where the tape ended. So at that point, the fire truck. Yeah, we put in a new tape. But the fire truck actually came, and there was chaos because they shipped an entire huge fucking fire truck out to the intersection of Castro and 18th with five firemen just to pick up the charred remains of Gavin with a shovel and dump him in the gutter. It took all these firemen just to do that, just to move some burned newspaper over to the gutter. It was kind of ridiculous.
But before they got there, people danced around the burning effigy for quite some time, luckily.
And then put out the fire with their piss. It was great. And then we got a great shot of the little policeman wheeling away the shopping cart that held like the skeleton of Gavin. And it was just, everyone's like, where are you taking Gavin? It's very sad. I don't know. What do we got next? I think this is more of Matilda giving, is this the Legends Award?
Here in the Castro District, only steps away from us, so many opportunities to buy our identity. The first award to present here at 18th and Castro, in the heart of the gayborhoods, is the In Awards. The In Award is the award for celebrities who should never have come out in the first place. And who here do we have to present the In Award? Oh, look, Mary, I love your outfit, darling. So much red, white, and blue, my favorite colors.
Those colors don't red, goddammit!
Woo! Okay, so the nominees for the N Award are Richard Chamberlain.
Who is that?
Oh, right. Wasn't he in Thornbirds? Okay, right. So he's nominated for waiting to come out of the closet until he was sure he had nothing to lose. And until everyone else to stop caring. The next nominee is B.D. Wong. After coming out with his novel Finding Foo about Wong's normal gay family, who cares about liberation? All we really want is a chance to adopt a kid. I want a family.
What's so normal about a gay family?
And finally, our last nominee is Jane Warner.
Where's Jane?
She's the Castro police officer who gets tough on those who don't belong. Do I belong, Jane? Okay, let's find out who the winner is. Drum roll. And the winner is Jane Warner! Where are you, Jane? And let's see, what do we have here for Jane Warner? The prize, the, oh, look, it's a closet! Wow, that is one luxurious gay closet. Our next award is the Gay for Pay Award. Who is here today to present, oh, look, oh, you're clearly gay for pay, baby. Tell us, who are the nominees?
Oh, I love award shows. Okay, the Gay for Pay Award. The nominees are Gilbert Baker for ripping off a Native American symbol to create the rainbow flag. One, two, I see a lot of rainbow flags. Supervisor Bevin Duffy for his efforts at urban renewal in the Castro and for choosing cash and Gavin's blessing over care for the community. And last, gay.com for running chat rooms that promote shopping, tweaking, and barebacking over community building, and doing it with ad money from sexual health organizations. Nice girls.
Hey, all going to this.
Okay, is there money in the gay for pay thing? The winner is Supervisor Bevan Duffy!
Is Bevan Duffy here tonight to accept his award, Gay for Pay? That's a very prestigious award. Where is Bevan Duffy? For our next award, here in the beautiful White Castro District, is the Racial Profiling Award. So much racial profiling going here in the Castro. Oh, what a wonderful community! Who is here tonight to present the Racial Profiling Award?
I'm here.
Oh, Mary.
Hi, my name is Mary, and I'm here to present the Racial I'm here to present the Racial Profiling Award. Our first nominee tonight, you can see them, they're actually right up here. Our first nominee is Badlands. For keeping black people who don't dress like white people or carry the right kinds of shopping bags far, far away from the Castro. For its long history of racist store policies, we nominate Badlands for the Racial Profiling Award. Yes! Our second nominee tonight, I'm sorry, you'll have to look a little further. They're that way. They're City Entertainment. They're not here in the Castro, they're in the Soma. And they are doing their best to keep people of color out of the sex shop. I mean, go figure. Finally, we have... Oh, wait, what's the last nominee? I can barely remember. Oh, okay. Finally, we have the San Francisco Police Department. Nominated for its long tradition of disproportionate violence against people of color. To the San Francisco Police Department, Gay Shame says, we are the ghosts of Jihad Alim Akbar, Idris Woo! Stelly, Sheila Dutois, and Dolores Huerta is still alive, isn't she? Yes. Well, I guess we're not her ghosts. Well, we're the ghosts of those who have passed on due to excessive, disproportionate police violence. Woo! Who's the winner tonight? Oh, this isn't this. This is.
Oh my God.
Racial profiling. There we go. Who's tonight's winner? It's the San Francisco Police Department. I mean, there's got to be some kind of fabulous prize that goes along with this. Isn't there a prize around here somewhere? I think, where is it? Is there a prize here?
The rainbow stick.
The rainbow stick. Is it the rainbow stick? Oh, I thought it was a pair of goggles that only saw black. Well, here we have a rainbow baton for the San Francisco Police Department. Is there anyone here who wants to accept this award? No? Well, we'll save it for next year, then.
And our next award, the Auntie Tom Award. That's the award for gay allies of reactionary straights. There's so many here tonight. How are we going to choose? The Auntie Tom Award. Who is here to present this award? Hello.
Hey, Mary. Our first nominee for the Auntie Tom Award is Paul Langley, owner of Harvey, standing right over there. Thanks to Paul, we can all remember Harvey Milk by voting for Gavin Newsom. And our second nominee for the Auntie Tom Award is Dan Savage. Yes, he sold his lifestyle to entertain.
Hey, faggot.
Woo! Hey. And the award for Andy Tom, the second annual Gay Shame Award, goes to
Paul Langley.
And what do we have here for Paul Langley? Oh my God, it's a framed photograph of Dan White. The person. Well, I see that Dan White is a local hero here in the Castro. For murdering Harvey Milk, we give Harvey's a framed photo of Dan White. Keeping on. And the award is now being delivered while we're waiting. We have one last.
All right, and that's the point where Matilda Awards. Gavin Newsom, the Legends Award for his vicious opposition to taking care of homeless issues in a reasonable and efficient and even realistic way in San Francisco, and also for refusing to oppose the Patriot Act, refusing to oppose Bush's illegal war in Iraq. Gavin Newsom was awarded with the Big Woozy. Yes, the Legends Award. But before we go out tonight, once again, you are listening to Enemy Combatant Radio. We did want to play a piece by our own Sarah Olson because it's so kick-ass. We want you guys to hear it. And as some of you may have heard, read in your newspapers around and about, yes, we had some Oakland High kids that were interrogated by the Secret Service. Their teacher called the SS when they were alleged to have said Bush is whack in their classrooms. So we all know how scary the implications of this are, the fact that they were grilled and grilled. Sarah has done some great reporting on that, so we're going to go ahead and play that for you now before we head out for the evening. This is Sarah Olson on Enemy Combatant Radio, live from the Mission in San Francisco.
High school was one of many Bay Area schools that organized programs to help students deal with the prospect of a war with Iraq. The Oakland School District held a day-long teach-in to educate students against the war. Students participated in anti-war organizing efforts and held school-wide walkouts and in other ways contributed to the national dialogue about the pending war in Iraq. Larry Felsen teaches English and drama at Oakland High School.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of students who got involved in the activities, and I think at the same time it was controversial. You know, we had an administration that actually opposed the teach-in, and who opposed the teachers and the students who were taking part in it. And you had students who actually took part in walkouts around the war. As well, and students were told they couldn't pass out leaflets. Students were advised that they might be suspended during the walkout. The gates were locked at Oakland High, and leaflets were ripped up and torn up. So it was quite controversial.
On April 23rd, the Secret Service was called into Oakland High School after 10th grade English teacher Sandy Whitney notified them that two 16-year-old students, whose identity has not been released to the press, had made comments that she interpreted as threatening to the life of President George Bush. Amara Lynn is a volunteer youth organizer with Not In Our Name.
There was a discussion going on in a class about the war, and the teacher interpreted some of the comments to be threatening to the president and went to the police department, and they said, oh, this is not our jurisdiction, call the Secret Service. And so she did. And the Secret Service came in, pulled these students out of class, interrogated them. They didn't have any legal representation with them. You know, nobody had advised them any of their rights. Their parents weren't told that this even happened until like at least a week and a half after it happened. And when the families came to meet with the principal about the incident, they didn't have, there were no language appropriate translators available. And both students are of Southeast Asian descent.
While English teacher Sandy Whitney claims the students made threats against the president, the students themselves describe a much different scenario. Gen Fujioka is an attorney with the Asian Law Caucus and is representing the two students.
What is baffling about this case, and on one level is baffling, and another level is disturbing, is that it is very obvious to anyone that there was no real threat made to the life of the president by two students who are participating in a conversation, a discussion in class, and they make disparaging comments apparently disparaging comments about the president. Or, and even that's subject to interpretation. If you think someone saying Bush is whacked as being a threat to the president, and it, I mean, it clearly shows disrespect to authority, but there's a big leap between, you know, drawing that interpretation and saying that you should call in the Secret Service.
The two students were visibly shaken by their experience. Cassie Lopez teaches Spanish and Ethnic Studies at Oakland High School. She said the students spoke with her about the incident the day after it happened.
These kids were targeted, and the end result was, you know, just a few days before school was out, one of the kids came in and just wept for about 15 minutes. He put his head in my lap in front of all the kids, and he cried. And he says, I can't be here anymore, you know. And, you know, that's irreparable damage, because the message is, you open up your mouth, you say something, you're going to get clobbered.
Activists claim that the situation is indicative of an environment at Oakland High School that was hostile to students speaking out against the pending war in Iraq. Amara Lynn of Not In Our Name.
This is not something that, for the students of Oakland High, is anything new. When the walkouts happened, people were passing out literature. They were told they couldn't pass out flyers. They were locked into their schools. The doors, the gates were chained shut. Students were assaulted by a security guard and told, you know, that they couldn't leave. And basically, the principal does not have a good track record of trying to support the students in asserting their voices and asserting their opinions.
The Oakland High School principal, Clement Mock, declined an interview for this story, but many have questioned his motives for allowing the Secret Service into Oakland High School. Gen Fujioka.
The principal has said that this is a case in which they were teaching the students that there was a line between what was appropriate speech and what was inappropriate speech, and that this was a, that their actions reflected, you know, the school's responsibility, quote, to teach having respect for authority in our leaders, unquote. That is what the principal has, how the principal has explained their conduct.
Teacher Cassie Lopez feels that Oakland High School should validate students and the questions that they have, rather than cracking down on their emergent voices.
Well, I think anybody involved in education knows that you're dealing with ideas. And I think our students need to know their ideas are valid. Questions they have are valid. It's valid to ask questions. It's valid to seek answers to things that we don't understand. In a lot of classrooms, kids had to read the newspapers, talk about the pros and the cons. But, you know, you were dealing with ideas. And I think it's important for our students to know that it's important to be able to ask those ideas and to seek for answers, whatever the answer.